When Whit Alexander told his brother Max that he had invented a new interactive board game, Max was convinced that the venture would fail. But after Cranium became a huge commercial success and Whit started looking toward rural Africa for his next business opportunity, Max had even more reason to be concerned. However, instead of letting his brother carry out his unusual business plan alone, he decided to follow him to Ghana to document the process. The result is his latest book, Bright Lights, No City, an African adventure on bad roads with a brother and a very weird business plan. It's published by Hyperion. I'm very pleased it has brought Max and Whit Alexander to our show today. Hello.
Thanks,
Hello.
Leonard. Hi.
Now, Max, you've dedicated the book to your brother, who you write put up with you and allowed you to put up with him. A lot of the book involves the two of you teasing each other. Was that the nature of your sibling relationship before this project began?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, stop.
Is it better for people who are close to work on a project like this, especially when it involves some pretty hairy situations?
It was great, Leonard. I mean, for me, Max was my big brother. He taught me to read, read me every Hardy Boys book growing up. And so to have him along on my latest adventure just sort of completed the circuit. And it was really so much fun. And he helped out a lot, too.
But hadn't you spent some time in Africa before?
That's right. I spent most of my 20s living and working throughout West Africa.
Why? Doing what? Because that's before
CIA
you joined
agent.
Microsoft.
That's what you thought. That was before.
You really thought he was CIA?
I'm pretty convinced. He used to visit me when I lived in New York and stay in my apartment in Brooklyn. And when he went to bed at night, like all good big brothers, I would go through his wallet. And he had some embassy IDs to die for.
Now we have to kill all these people, Max. Jeez.
Under different names, right?
Actually, under his name, but then I figured they don't tell.
Well, what were
brothers.
You doing in Africa?
I actually did African studies at Georgetown. Spent most of my 20s over there working on a variety of projects
in Ghana.
No, actually not. It
because
was
Ghana
Ivory
then
Coast.
Was a troubled country.
It was, very much, and now it's just kind of flipped. I was mainly in Ivory Coast, did my third year of university there, and now the troubles have sort of switched, actually.
Because Ivory Coast was very stable, and then after its longtime leader died, it went into serious convulsions.
That's exactly right. The Paris of Africa, they called it.
So you worked at Microsoft after that, doing what?
That's right. I headed up all the maps, actually. So I did the maps for the first Encarta encyclopedia and led the team that created the Encarta World Atlas, the most detailed atlas that had ever been created up to that point.
And then you retired?
Well, looking for the next thing. And so the Cranium opportunity came along with a good friend and colleague from Microsoft, and Richard and I became the Cranium guys then.
And how old were you when you sold that game to Hasbro and went into another retirement?
Well, I was about 48, and I said to myself, if I don't get back and do what I'd promised myself I was going to do for decades in Africa, when am I ever going to do it? And so Burrow was born.
But Burrow seems to be quite different from anything you'd been involved with before, or am I missing something?
Well, you're not really, but what you're missing is during my 20s, you know, I'm the guy whose favorite movie is Swiss Family Robinson. You know, I love taking the coconut shells and the clam shells and the vine and making the running water system in the treehouse, right?
So you did that at our house.
Off the deck, yeah. So, you know, you see all these amazing innovations like the better lantern, the better water filter, the better cook stove. And even in my 20s, I was asking myself, if all of these things are better, then why isn't anyone making a business out of them? And really, that's what Burrow's about. We're trying to be, if you will, you know, the Sears catalog of old for the developing world.
But you originally started off with an idea of rechargeable batteries, bringing rechargeable batteries to a place where in many of the villages there's no electricity. We'll get into that in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Ghana, because it had become one of the most stable democracies in Africa?
That's right, Leonard. I like to say friendly, free, and fair. It's just a great place to do business and wonderful people.
And we've just seen a smooth transition after the president died.
That was sad news on the president, but great news for Ghana's democracy.
And the vice president, who now is president, was a guest on the show just a few weeks back, and he predicted that Ghana would never again become an authoritarian country.
I suspect he's correct. The young people I talk to, I don't see it happening ever either. I think they're on the path.
Now, Max, you'd been a senior editor at People and executive editor at Variety.
Yep.
Were you in retirement at the time?
No. I've been living in Maine for about the past 10 or 12 years, freelancing, writing books, editing books. I was very proud to have edited George Plimpton's last book and kind of going about my business, as it were, and then this opportunity came up to make sure my brother wasn't going to get abducted by armed rebels in Africa and decided to check it out.
Well, you're leaving a comfortable life in Maine to follow him around some remote villages.
That sounds right to me
like you might have been getting a little bored and you needed some adventure.
It was definitely outside of my comfort zone, I got to tell you. And but, you know, on one level, my book is simply about how to start a business. And I think any entrepreneurship takes you out of your comfort zone. And I felt that that extreme example of doing it in Ghana could make for a good story.
Well, you write that there's a big difference between talking about bringing a business to Africa and actually touching down on the ground there. Was that also true of writing about the complexities of African life?
I would say so. I mean, I learned so much on this adventure that we were on. I spent maybe a total of 9 months in Ghana over the course of 2 years. And really a lot of my expectations about what Africans and Ghanaians are like were really just blown out of the water by seeing the actual people and seeing how they live their lives. And one interesting example is that Ghanaians, for the most part, do not really consider themselves poor, even though they certainly are by our standards. They measure their wealth, if you were, by their family connections, by their security in their villages, and that sort of thing, by their religion. So there was a lot that I really did not expect to see over there.
Although you do give us a Westerner's view in your subtitle about, you say, an African adventure on bad roads with a brother with a very weird business plan. By the way, the book is published by Hyperion, right?
Yes.
Now, Whit, tell us about the product that you were bringing to Ghana.
Yeah, well, you know, where to begin when you have this grand vision of a whole line of tools to build better lives? And we started by following the money. And the thing is, Leonard, that people earning a buck or two a day are spending a crazy amount of their income on throwaway batteries. And we looked at that, and, you know, they're living off-grid. And you look at some of the challenges they face. 80% of Ghanaians have a cell phone, but only 50% of people live on the electric grid. So, you know, whether, you know, you're living on a farm in eastern Ghana or, you know, you're at the airport at Logan hunting around for a power outlet, this is a universal challenge, how to keep your phone charged. So we looked at rechargeable batteries,
But you need electricity to recharge batteries?
Well, that's exactly right. And so we had to come up with sort of a Netflix model that would enable us to recharge them at a central branch location, have dedicated resellers, trusted opinion leaders on the ground in the villages, and they're the exchange point for the borough rechargeable battery service.
Well, most of the people you met in Ghana expected you to offer them humanitarian aid or work like an NGO. Did they understand your business model, which is kind of like a rental service?
Yeah. You know, it is funny. When a couple of white guys show up in a big pickup truck for the first time in any village, as Max documents in the book, the expectation is that you are there to give them a school or give them a well. But, you know, they also have a lot of experience buying services like mobile phone service. So very quickly, people come around and see that we're offering value for money.
Was your Western business sense an asset there?
Oh, very much so. And don't get me wrong, you have to rely on your local team. These people are amazing problem solvers. But we've been able to create a real startup culture at our branch office. And it's exciting to see the young people in Ghana responding to this.
What about a negative side? Was there any?
Because
you're bringing a Western sensibility to a place where the culture can, in some ways, it has been influenced by the West because it was a British colony for so many years. And as you reveal here, there's an awful lot of globalization at work in Ghana today.
You're exactly right. And, you know, I remind myself when I get up every morning and head off to the office in Ghana that I'm a guest in this great country, and nobody asked me here to do this, and this is, you know, this is my thing. And so you have to be very respectful of that.
Was your business plan limited to Ghana, or did you plan to use it as a base of operations for all of Africa?
Very much, for all of Africa and hopefully beyond. We think people are ready to invest in building better lives. We have a pilot location now. I like to say we're building the first McDonald's, and people, you know, we're going to blow it out of the water as soon as we just dial it in a little bit better.
I hope your product is a little more nutritional.
It certainly is.
Max, your book is largely about having to adjust to local culture on every level of operation, from whom to hire to what services to offer and how to keep everything going. Was it all that difficult?
Absolutely. I mean, the culture clash is one of the overriding themes in the book. I mean, some of the challenges my brother faced, for example, none of his employees really knew how to drive when he hired them, and he needed them to drive to get these products out and around and to visit villages. So really, WIT ended up training all these adult Ghanaians how to drive, which was a little scary.
And while he was off working on prototypes in China, because that's mm-hmm. where you would get your supplies.
That's correct.
You were researching life in Ghana.
That's right. I spent a lot of time out on farms, spending nights with these people, trying to get to know how they lived, working on their farms, swinging a machete. And it was a fascinating experience because one of the things that was so interesting is that Ghanaians really don't waste anything at all. You know, every little chicken bone gets chewed up to get the calcium.
Well, you've written books on food.
That's so right. I've co-authored some cookbooks in the past.
And you wound up eating some things you might not have eaten otherwise?
Oh, very.
That's for sure.
Indeed. Just about every day. We ate, there's a large rat-like rodent in Ghana called a grass cutter that's considered quite a delicacy, and had to eat quite a lot of grass cutter.
He's so adventurous. He had one of those his first night in Africa. I was impressed.
Also ate something like a cat.
Well, cat is very popular in certain ethnic groups in Ghana, and it's interesting. They keep them as pets also. They're somehow able to compartmentalize tabby and the meal.
There's a surprising amount of international influence in this part of the world, as I mentioned. You met the people you met used batteries from China. Most of the ones you interviewed to work at Burrow had previously worked at a local Barclays Bank division.
That's correct.
And you were able to hire BYU interns who lived just up the road from Burrow headquarters. What were Brigham Young University students doing there?
Well, you know, the Mormon Church has a very strong presence in Ghana for a lot of different historical reasons, and BYU is one of the strongest centers for social entrepreneurship and micro-franchising. So they have an active program there, and a lot of their kids come over in the summer. So we've been fortunate to tap into that. We always pair them up with a local Ghanaian intern.
Now, the business has grown considerably. It's not just about batteries. In fact, it's my sense from reading the end of the book, that you're making most of your profits from other kinds of products.
That's right. The Burrow Battery Service is where it began, but we quickly saw this killer app with the phone charging. And the thing I love is seeing that crossover, like I mentioned earlier, that this is a great thing in America as well, so we're now selling it here. We've got the Burrow Light as well, which is very big. We've expanded into solar. We have our first health products with vision eyeglasses, and our first agricultural products with a manual irrigation pump.
And are people still renting batteries from you? Because some of the batteries they were using in the past exploded, didn't they? If batteries aren't kept refrigerated, usually, they can deteriorate quickly. They can unstable.
Certainly the batteries they were using, these throwaway batteries, you know, it's back to Christmas 71 with your leaky toy being ruined by an old carbon sink battery. So they're used to that. And it is true, maybe you're referring to, we had some early issues with our earliest phone charging prototypes, but we've sorted that all out now.
But I actually am proud that I solved the problem with the batteries that weren't charging properly by taking some to a local voodoo priest, a witch doctor, who put more power in the batteries.
That was invaluable. Thank you, Max.
there probably were some unexpected setbacks and costs that you might not have run into if you had started this company somewhere else.
I think you're right, you know, but in some senses you couldn't, and you've got to be on the ground there understanding people's needs to make it work. And it's taken longer than we'd hoped, but we're getting there now.
So have you moved permanently to Accra?
No, not at all. I split my time, but I'm frankly these days about three-quarter time in Ghana and then back in Seattle.
And What about you, Max? Are you back in Maine?
I'm back in Maine and back and forth to China lately. I'm starting work on a book in China, and I've been studying Mandarin over there, which is kind of a joke, but I'm plugging away at it, working at my Chinese every day.
Well, you start off every conversation with ni hao.
Ni hao, okay. And then you're off to a start, yeah.
Did you learn any of the local languages in Ghana?
Well,
because there are so many.
There are about, 80 languages in Ghana alone, although there's really two or three that are the most important. And we did play around with them, and we've learned some phrases, but it is very difficult.
Although everything is in English anyway, isn't it? Because
there
are so many languages.
That's what makes it a little bit challenging. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And are you going to expand to other countries?
We certainly intend to. First, we'll go across Ghana, and then Burrow, we hope, can be worldwide.
Worldwide. Well, you can go into a lot of third world countries, which have the same kinds of problems.
That's
that
exactly
Ghana would
right.
Have,
but
at
again,
least in the rural areas.
You know, needing light away from electricity, whether it's your camper or your sailboat or your cocoa farm, it can come in handy. So we're hoping to sell some here as well.
And did anybody in Africa know Cranium? Did that give you any kind
Actually,
of...
Actually, I found a copy of Cranium for sale in Accra. I only found
right.
one,
yeah.
But no, it's not terribly well known. We brought some other Cranium games over that proved very popular, so we hope to do a localized edition of some of those.
And Max, you're not going to be giving us a Ghanaian cookbook?
I don't think so, although I did meet some very good cooks in Ghana, including Witt's business partner's wife, and I could do that, actually.
Max Alexander's book is called Bright Lights, No City, An African Adventure on Bad Roads with a Brother and a Very Weird Business Plan. It's published by Hyperion. Max Alexander has been here with that brother, Whit Alexander, and I thank both of you so much for being on our show.
Thank you,
Leonard.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Leonard.